Day, or perhaps it's a good evening where you are. My name is Henrik from Sweden, and you're listening to Red Ice Radio with headquarters in Northern Europe and North America. RedIceCreations.com is the website. Our full archives you can find on RedIceMembers.com. Go there to sign up and get instant access to over 1,000 programs. You can hear a new radio program 3 times a week. Every other week, one of these shows is a Radio 314 with Lana. And sometimes we do those a bit more often, and they come out about once every week. We also produce videos, insight episodes, TV programs, and of course, don't forget to follow along our busy news section, updates and breaking stories on many of the important topics that we cover. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we're speaking with Georgos, or George, from the New York chapter of Golden Dawn in Greece. I thought you'd be interested in actually hearing from someone within Golden Dawn, as opposed to getting the information regarding what they're about from a lying mainstream media parrot that is reposting, I don't know, an SPLC press release with wild accusations, exaggerations, and propaganda to fill your head with lies about the only party in Greece setting up a true opposition to what now is unfolding. The situation in Greece has unfortunately deteriorated, as you might know, and today we're going to try to get some answers regarding what has happened, the background, where this began, and where this is heading if the destructive Syriza continues to sell out the people as they have. As of right now, latest news that came out a day or so after this recording is that the leftist party is now starting to break up, and people from within the party is going in a different direction. Perhaps not that surprising. Do you remember how the other Marxist democratic socialists in Europe were absolutely swooning when Alexis Tsipras came to power? Well, today we're going to highlight the reality of what happened, what always happens when destructive liberals get to power. We'll begin to dispel some of the myths and misconceptions about Golden Dawn first, including their symbol, their politics, and what their concerns really are about. Welcome, George. Thank you so much for coming on with us today. It's great to have you with us. Hope you're doing well today.
Doing very well, Henrik, and it's a pleasure to be on the show. I've listened to your broadcast for some time now, on and off, and it's nice to be here.
Well, thank you so much. Good to have you here, as I said. I've been following you guys' website on and off for the last, year, I think, maybe even a little bit more. Some very interesting things coming through there, of course. From a Greek perspective, but in English, because that's unfortunately one of the barriers that I've had in terms of understanding the situation in Greece is the language barrier. So it's really good that we have people like you doing this. But, you know, before we speak more in detail about Greece and the situation in Greece, what's happened there, the bankers and all that stuff, can you tell us a little bit about Golden Dawn, the New York chapter, if you will, and how you got involved in that?
Oh, yes. Well, I'm the editor for the main New York sites chapter. I also do editing work for the main site in Greece. They have an English section now. What the New York chapter does basically is we work on two fronts. One is that we try to collect donations. Over the past 3 years, we've collected a lot of different types of food and humanitarian aid, which we ship to Greece, and have Golden Dawn distribute, you know, in Athens and other parts of the country. And the second thing is really to correct a lot of the misinformation in the English-speaking media about what we believe, you know, our ideology, what kind of goals we have for Greece. And, you know, we also have a section, a YouTube channel called Golden Dubs and Subs, which we basically put subtitles in a lot of the Greek, parliament speeches and whatnot, so people can get a firsthand look at what, you know, what we're saying in parliament and things like that. And this has gone on for, you know, 3 years now, and it's gotten a huge following, and more than what we expected. It got more of a following in Europe than in America, actually. You know, we get a lot of hits from Sweden, from England, Australia, too. They're just all over, really. You know, at first we thought it would be mostly, you know, the United States, but it really just kind of expanded beyond what we had originally anticipated. So, yeah.
Well, let's just kind of cover some of the misconceptions, the confusion, the lies and the exaggerations that come to us through the media. I mean, I wanted to bring someone on like you, George, who actually is within the party, understand what they're talking about, as opposed to getting it through the skewed version of this in the media. What do you think we should know about the party and what they really stand for, as opposed to what the media is telling us?
Well, the first thing I would say is that, to put it in the most simple terms, is that Golden Dawn wants a Greece for the Greeks. And that's not just in terms of population-wise. It's also in terms of basically what Golden Dawn wants is self-determination for the Greek people in their homeland. It's not a conspiracy to murder immigrants or to take over the entire European continent, like they try to make it like a small tiny country like Greece is going to be the next Third Reich that's going to right. storm through Europe or some kind of ridiculousness like this. And that's basically the only way that our enemies can spin it, because the reality is that the other parties in Greece and the other powers that are trying to control Greece from abroad, they have a vested interest in making sure that the Greeks don't have control of their own destiny in the Eastern Mediterranean, because that conflicts with their strategical geopolitical plans. So, in a nutshell, that's what I could say is the basis of it. Now, if you want to ask me in more detail, specific things, I could tell you that.
Get into that in a little bit more later here. I wanted to ask you about what you just mentioned here, because I mean that's what I've read in the media too. It's a Nazi party, and that's it, right? I mean, even down to the symbol that's used, and I mean I've even right. seen these economists out of the New York Times, Jewish economists, doing comparison charts of the economic situation in Greece with the Weimar Republic, and they think consequently right. that a new Adolf will like reincarnate into a young man in Greece,
Yeah, that's kind of the angle they're going for. Although, even if you buy into the historical view of what they're saying about Germany in before World War II, Germany was in a totally different position in Europe at that time, population wise, industrial wise, and everything. I mean, it's really a joke to try and equate Greece with Germany in the past, Weimar Republic days. I mean, there are some similarities in terms of control by, international capital bankers and things like this. And of course, there are some similarities there with the economic issues and the lack of stability. But in terms of this kind of fear-mongering that Greece is going to be the rise of a new terror for Europe, it's really a joke. So
yeah, it is a joke. I mean, I don't know how anybody can be against, what is being said about the bankers, considering the situation of what has happened here. We'll get into that in a little bit more detail later. But just tell us briefly about the symbol, the meandros. What is that symbol about?
The meandros is an ancient Greek symbol. Its original roots go into Asia Minor. There's a river known in English as the Meander River, which has that kind of shape. It symbolizes kind of like eternity or infiniteness and a bond. It is basically one of the oldest Greek symbols in existence. And this symbol has nothing to do, obviously, with Nazism or the swastika, although even the swastika was found in ancient Greek art as well. But again, you find the swastika in ancient Chinese art, in India, in, all over the world, you can find, art from the past or the ancient times with a form in one form or another of the swastika. But the meander, or the meandros, is a classically Greek symbol. And this is found in all kinds of Western artwork, on buildings. I'm sure even in Sweden you might have had.
I've seen them many times.
So, the whole thing again of it's really just playing on people's ignorance. You know, people see these kind of symbols every day and they don't really notice them, or they, you know, they try to create it like it's a copy of the swastika, which is, you know, obviously anybody who really knows anything about architecture or past European history can see that's not true at all. I mean, in fact, here in New York, we have a famous coffee cup that is commonly bought any, you know, at like restaurants and things like that. It's a blue coffee cup with like with the symbol all around it, and the one who owns the company is a Jewish guy that makes this coffee cup. So apparently he didn't know that he had a Nazi swastika symbol on his coffee cup.
Right.
I've even seen it in a Jewish cemetery close by to my house. They had a Jewish like tombstone with a kind of like a headstone with a vase on top of it, and that vase had the same pattern around it. So here you have a deceased Jew that apparently had a swastika on top of his headstone. So,
yeah, I think someone pointed out it was like it kind of looks like the Israeli shekel actually has a similar kind of bent to it or whatnot. So, I mean, it's
I suppose. But the thing is that this particular symbol was never ever seen as a swastika related to a swastika until Golden Dawn came around, and now they want to make it like, you know, the swastika. So before that, nobody even said anything about it. So.
Well, you know, George, it seems to me that whenever there is a symbol that is brought out that has a strong connection to any European roots of an ancient tribe, it's usually discredited immediately as some kind of hateful white supremacist symbol or something. It's just just what happens every time. And as you said, despite that, you know, swastikas are found largely all over the world, but particularly in certain areas in Europe and coming out from the Indo-European early civilization. So, you know, it's just what it is. It's our symbols. Why shouldn't we continue to use them? Right.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I think what they're trying to do through that symbol is try to write off Golden Dawn as a copy of the Nazi movement. And in reality, the Golden Dawn is basically a movement that has roots that predate Nazi Germany by a very, very long time. So, but we can get more into that later if you want. So.
Yeah, well, if you want, actually, we can talk a little bit about it now and see if there's anything that you think we should know about that. I mean, does it have anything in common with, I don't know, fascism, economics, or anything like that? I mean, in a serious way, not just kind of in the way the media looks at it, but so few people actually know what those kinds of systems were about to begin with, and they just basically slab that on anything they can't understand, right?
Well, the first thing I would have to say is that in Greece today, and in the Western world in general, but especially in Greece, because this is linked to the national pride, let's say, even the national pride of the people who really don't care about the country, but the whole, let's say, egoistic pride, as opposed to a more deeper consciousness of the Greek culture, is centered around the concept of democracy. You know, democracy is a holy type of term. It's not really understood in a kind of, I should say, it's not really understood in the sense of what it really was in ancient Greece versus what it is today. So in Greece today, there's a lot of talk about democracy and what exists in modern Greece with the parliamentary democracy that they have. This system is, in fact, not based on the ancient Greek democracy, but it's based on the English parliamentary system. So there's nothing really very Greek about it at all. And in fact, if you were to bring back the ancient Greek democracy, which might I add was only a small portion of the Greek history in terms of political theory. But even then, if you bring it back, if you had someone who said, let's say, for instance, let's bring back ancient pure Greek democracy the way it was, then only men who had served in the military would be allowed to vote. No foreigners would be allowed to vote. No women would be allowed to vote. And basically, it would be called fascist today if they brought it back.
Right.
The people who are talking about what is democracy and what is the true democracy and blah, 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 all this kind of thing would have to essentially point their finger and say, oh, this is not democratic. But it is democratic because that's who invented democracy. That was the standard of democracy. And of course, back then you didn't have television. You didn't have, mass media. So when people decided on things, the small portion of Athenians who were allowed to decide on these matters had to prove that they were educated in some way, or they had fought, physically and put their lives on the line for the country. And that's why, even for the time when it was working, it wasn't perfect, but it was a totally different thing than what we call democracy today. Now, Golden Dawn, on the other hand, we respect the democratic laws of the country as they currently are, and we participate in the parliamentary elections. We respect the current constitution of the Greek government, which the current system that's in place now is not respecting. But what we base our ideology on, and this is where that thing that you had mentioned about, the fascism and the economic theory versus, what Golden Dawn is compared to the other parties, is that Golden Dawn's ideology in its root sense is based off of ancient Sparta, which is based off of a more, militaristic type of defensive ideology, which, as ancient Sparta was, a small population surrounded by very hostile city-states that had to basically invest in its own people being capable of self-preservation and protecting themselves from hostile enemies around it. And that's kind of the system, the situation that Greece is in today. It's a very small country being surrounded by a lot of enemies, a lot of, strategic geopolitical interests are in conflict with what the Greeks want. And so if Greece is to survive as a country, we believe as a party that we have to nurture these types of things that the current decadent Western, European parliamentary English democracy type of system doesn't nurture, because it nurtures a capitalistic, hedonistic, soft type of lifestyle that just doesn't work in a country like Greece now if it wants to survive into the next century. So basically, the similarities, like for example, when people accuse us of being a Nazi party or a fascist party, well, the truth of the matter is that when you look at Mussolini or Hitler, they base their ideologies a lot on ancient Sparta. Hitler has even mentioned that in his writings in the past, that he based a lot of his thinking on Hellenism. He didn't just pull it out of thin air, his ideology. And basically, what we're trying to say is that the basis of a lot of political theories, not just democracy, have their roots in ancient Greece. So most nationalist political theory in all of Europe has its roots in Sparta. So a lot of these similarities are, it's not that Golden Dawn is copying the German National Socialists so much as the German National Socialists copied an ideology which Golden Dawn had based their roots off of, which was Sparta, which is something completely Greek, as you can imagine.
Yes, so. Yes. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that puts it in a different different perspective, doesn't it? Or would you say generally that people in Greece are aware of their ancient roots? Are people proud of their heritage and their history? I mean, in other European countries, especially Scandinavia, and this is kind of, we really don't get taught ancient European history, and we don't get an opportunity to awaken that within us. How are things in Greece, would you say, generally?
Well, in Greece, it's a bit different because they do teach ancient Greek history in schools. It's a very intensive subject because in Greece, since it's a country with such a long history, they have to break it up into big sections, which is like the ancient Greek period, Byzantium, the Byzantine Empire, and then the more modern history of Greece, which is a very, very complex issue. What they do, however, while they promote this national pride, at least they have up until very, very recently, they always promote it with that the only political ideology or the only accepted ideology of Greek political theory is democracy. So they basically take a small percentage of what the Greek political theories were in ancient Greece, which was, you know, Athens, you had Sparta, you had the monarchies like in Macedonia and Crete with the Minoans. So they basically leave a lot of things out and just push the democracy, democracy, democracy. You know, we gave light to the world with democracy because this fits what the Western Europeans want to promote. You know, it's a synthesis of the anti-nationalism, and it's a distorted version of the democracy because, like I had said before, if we had really introduced ancient Greek-style democracy, none of these Europeans would be talking about the virtues of it right now,
right,
the way it is now. Yeah. So in a sense, yes, they do promote the history, but they leave out a lot of key, key points of the history to give you a different conclusion or to give the Greek children a different conclusion about what it means to be Greek or what it means to be a part of the Hellenic civilization. You know?
Very good. Now, later I have some things I want to ask you in terms of how things are, you know, for the people in Greece, the climate in the media, and all those kinds of interesting things on the sidelines that we never kind of hear about. But first now, I wanted to, I guess, go over the timeline, really, of what happened in Greece, financially speaking, but also we can talk about some of the political climate and all that. And you can back up however much you want, George, to kind of bring the listener up to speed so they can understand what has happened more recently. So let us know where we should begin.
Well, I guess the best thing to do would be to talk briefly about, go back about 40 years. Greece in the end of the mid 70s, it was around 1974, 1975. That was when Greece's dictatorship, as they called it, which was the junta. The junta was from 1967 to 1974. It was a not a completely, let's say, nationalistic government in the sense of Golden Dawn would be. But it was more on the side of traditionalism and, a strong centralized government and whatnot. And this was viewed by the left as the kind of the worst coming of evil that had ever occurred in Greek history. And at this time, the Greek economy was growing at a very natural pace. The regime at the time had built a lot of factories. They had installed electricity and telephone lines in areas of the country that never had it before. Basically, they had built huge infrastructure, you know, roads, power, you name it, everything. So the country was getting its, the early stages of becoming fully self-sufficient at that point. And now when this stopped, when the regime was overthrown or taken out of power by the powers that be in Europe and the United States, a new system was installed, which was known as the social democracy, which is a commonplace, you know, in Sweden and many other places in Europe today. And this became a totally different type of system where what they did was from about 1975 to through the early 80s is they started closing down all those factories. They started closing down all the private sector type of work and jobs and everything. And they started making people more and more dependent on public sector work. And so what happened was is that the Greek government started, instead of investing money, instead of, taking loans to build a factory or to, build a plant that makes some kind of refrigerators or agriculture or whatever it is. Instead, they just started taking money from the Europeans or from the international bankers, and they started forming a huge, let's say, not a welfare state in the way that they understand it in Sweden, where you have like all kinds of benefits and maternity leave and hospital medical care and everything like that. However, they had this, but the main thing they did was create public sector jobs that didn't need to be there, that you could never be fired from, ever. So they would go to a village, for instance, and they would have their, at that time, it was basically a two-party system starting to form. And they would say, okay, well, if you vote for me in my political party and put me in the parliament, I'll get your son and your sister, your brother, the other one. They're all going to have a job at the public trough in some kind of form or another, you know, meaning right. like city hall, you know, the school system was another big one in the university system. Basically, they were getting paid exorbitant amounts of money for Greek standards. And these people were not producing anything. And they often hired, you know, 10 civil servants where there really should have only been two to create an army of loyal voters that would vote for anything as long as those civil servant jobs kept coming in. And this was the practice in Greece from the early 80s all the way up until 2008, 2009. It's still that happening today, but it's a lot less now because there's just no more money to go around to pay for all this. And that's what's caused the recent collapse. So what I wanted to do by telling you that about that history is to give people an understanding of how Greece got to be in the situation it is today. People weren't voting based on ideology or based on a certain type of a certain set of principles like the right and left, or, you know, do I agree with abortion or do I not agree with abortion, or am I conservative or am I, you know, liberal? It was more just who they happened to know that would get them or their immediate family a chance to become middle class.
Right.
Because the country was very poor for a long period, and then they just artificially created a middle class overnight. And now, you know, with the, as I'm sure many of the listeners have heard, with the crisis in 2008 that started, all of these things started to rupture. And now the people are kind of in shock as to this whole system collapsing. They don't really know why, most the average people, I should say, they don't know why their economy is collapsing. They think it's like a kind of, you know, they try to push the angle like the current government right now with Syriza and Tsipras, the current government, that it's the Germans who are just being mean and taking their money away.
Yeah, you know? I've seen that, Merkel with the Hitler mustache and all that stuff, you know.
So, right, exactly, you know, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that funny, George? Everyone's just always blaming the Nazis for everything. It's the Nazis. The Nazis are back. They're doing all of this to us.
Merkel, you know, the most... you know, if there was anyone working for the occupiers of who destroyed Nazi Germany, it would be Merkel.
Exactly.
Is there any particular point, or let's say particular moment you wanted me to start from? Now that I gave them the background of that, you want to start like at the point of recently, like with the last, let's say, 5 years and what happened?
Yeah, I mean, tell us a bit about how this kind of unraveled, because it really picks up when 2008, 2009, something like that. And then has it been a steady just decline or what? Yeah, tell us a bit what has happened since that time.
So what we can do is we can go to that point. Well, in 2008, that was when the first talk of memorandum happened, you know, meaning that they were going to implement austerity measures because there was a debt crisis in the country. The country had, the government, I should say, had racked up a huge amount of debt into the billions with no way of paying for it. As I said, no means of production, no factories. No, I mean, the only thing it had was tourism and shipping. And most of that was already heavily taxed and not doing so well to keep the whole country afloat and keep that whole middle class afloat. Because, as I said, a huge percentage of the workforce was just getting the civil servant jobs. And that's what the source of their income was. So, around that time, it was the center-left party in control, which is known as PASOK. They had at that time, the figurehead for PASOK was a man, George Papandreou, who was born in the United States. He's only of partial Greek ancestry. His mother's ancestry is a Polish Jew ancestry. And he had the name, though, from the past, of his grandfather, who was the kind of, let's say, the initial architect of this economic miracle that happened in the 1980s. So we had a lot of family pull, let's say, a romanticized view of this person, because they, the old people, had saw that this man, you know, he brought us into the middle class, his grandfather, so let's vote for him again. You know, let's vote for the family again.
Yeah.
So they voted for the grandson. And right after that, everything collapsed because there was no money to go around as it had been in the 80s to keep this whole thing afloat. And instead, they had to make a huge bailout payment. He tried to get a referendum going, and they kicked him out of the party because of that, because the European powers did not want any referendum on the matter of any sort. And he did that to kind of save his own name so he could re-enter politics later after the memorandum took effect. Similar to what has just happened with Alexis Tsipras today. But moving back, you know, right into that, back then, that's when the problem started. So then they implemented the austerity measures the following year. Then the center-right party took over, which is known as New Democracy or Nea Dimokratia. And New Democracy didn't promise that they were going to stop the bailout or stop another memorandum, but they promised that they would negotiate the bailout. They would make things easier for the Greek people. You know, you can still keep your civil service job. We're just going to cut a little bit here and there. It's going to be a little tough, but if you stick with us, the message was, if you stick with us and you exert a little bit of, let's say, you know, a little bit of restraint and, you know, and tolerate this cut to your pension or to your salary or whatever, that things will get better, that there's light at the end of the tunnel because of this. So this didn't happen. It just got worse and worse and worse.
Of course.
More businesses closed down. More things happened. The government started selling off, public works. They started making deals with, foreign pharmaceutical companies to import, cheap generic drugs into the country. Like there's one called Teva Pharmaceuticals, which is a Israeli pharmaceutical company, which is known for producing dangerous generic drugs, which have impurities and other kinds of problems. Hmm. And to replace that with what had originally been used, which was like from, Bayer. And there's another one from Sweden, I think, that they use. I forgot the name of it now.
It's like AstraZeneca or something.
I think Glaxo, maybe, is a Swedish company. Anyway,
yeah.
The main European pharmaceutical makers were used to who they used before in hospitals.
Right.
So this party, New Democracy, they started getting all these under-the-table contracts with the Israelis. They started signing off, certain things to privatize them. And this was all in exchange for the bailout to keep things a little bit, running, But as this went on for about 5 years, people started realizing, hey, this isn't going to go anywhere. People were getting fed up. And that's when the current party that's in power now got its, start. Because they, they've been around for some years, but they didn't really pick up steam until the whole thing with the center-right party, which had signed all these memorandums and the Greek people suffered. So then they had Syriza, which is the current party now, and the current Prime Minister, Alexis Tsipras, who had promised, I'm going to stop the memorandum, I'm going to stop Germany, out Merkel, out Schäuble, mm-hmm. all of them, get out, we're going to throw you out, Greece, and all this kind of populist talk, very tough talk, promises to end all the austerity measures, to give all the civil servant jobs back that had been cut, a lot of promises. Now, Golden Dawn, we had been saying that they're not going to do any of this and they're just going to sign the memorandum. And back then, people really weren't. Some people, of course, we had gained a lot of support as well over that time because of the economic and social problems in the country electorally. But most people still wanted to believe in this thought that they could keep this kind of system running that had been going on the last 40 years. They had become accustomed to it. I mean, it's
exactly. Yeah.
A generational thing. So the fear of the unknown, like going for Golden Dawn or going for, somebody radically different, was still only a minority of the population was willing to entertain that. And so they wanted to believe in this type of, attitude where we can tell the European Union to not give us any more austerity. And at the same time, we can stay in the European Union and things will be like they were before. Now, how that could be possible, I don't know. But people who are, you know, desperate and they think in a kind of, in a confused way after all those years, they believed it. Or not to say that they believed it, but they thought that at least Tsipras would do something, that he would do more than what the previous government had done.
Yeah.
And so here we are today. Let's go to about January of this year. Alexis Tsipras was elected at that point. There was he had the largest amount of popularity of any recent Greek politician in history on the anti-memorandum ticket, you know, that they were going to tear up the memorandum in front of the parliament, in front of the EU. He was going to rip it up and everything. It was really tough. And so all the people were behind him on that. I shouldn't say all the people, but a good portion of the Greek population was believing in this myth. And they were interviewing people in the streets at that time who were, you know, after he got elected, they were dancing. They were saying, we're going to have our money back. We're going to have jobs again. It's a new day for Europe. And all the European leftist politicians in other parts of Europe were saying the same thing, actually.
Oh, they were ecstatic. Yeah, they loved it. You know?
I know in Italy they were making a big deal. It's particularly the Mediterranean countries making a huge deal out of this. They were all these other, you know, radical left, quote unquote, parties were saying, oh, it's a new day for Europe, and I support Tsipras, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I'm assuming in Sweden as well. Did that happen there, too?
That's correct. Yeah.
So they were making a big deal out of it then, like it's some kind of
coming. This is going to turn everything around and finally and very excited. And really happened?
So anyway, after that, it went on for about like 2 months. Like they were using some really interesting propaganda tactics. Like, for example, they were making a big deal out of the fact that Tsipras, unlike the previous government, the previous prime minister, Antonis Samaras, of the New Democracy Party, that Tsipras doesn't wear a tie.
Right.
He doesn't wear a tie. He's young. He's fresh. You know, he's. And all this time, they were getting in negotiations with Europe, and nothing was happening. Basically, like, nothing happened. There was no, he never tore up any memorandum. He didn't, you know, get tough with them or anything. Nothing happened. And it's worth mentioning that in his party, in Syriza, a lot of the people from the previous center-left government that had, you know, signed the memorandum in 2008 had shuffled and wormed their way into this party in 2015. So this was all a lot of smoke and mirrors going on, you know, and Golden Dawn, of course, was wide awake and seeing all this, but a lot of the average voters, unfortunately, were not. And another one they were publishing a lot was their finance minister, a man by the name of Yanis Varoufakis. And I don't know, maybe you've seen him in the media as well. You know, they were making a big deal that he was riding a motorcycle, you know, that he plays video games. They were trying to make like a pop culture icon of these people.
Right. He's just like one of you guys. Right.
Right. Yep. Yeah. He's a millionaire, but he's just like one of you. Right. 1,000 yards a month. So anyway, that happened for about 2 months. And then we got to where we are, let's say the last month, where not only did the Syriza government not negotiate the memorandum, this radical leftist party signed the most radical memorandum ever. It makes the center right memorandum look like a leftist commie memorandum in comparison, you know, what they just signed.
Right.
So getting more into that, at the beginning of the month, that's when the whole thing started, where Tsipras was saying, okay, what I'm going to do, I'm going to let the people decide on this memorandum. So he put it to a referendum. And I believe personally, and many other members in the party also believe, that he was expecting a yes vote. Like, in other words, that the people who he put this memorandum to, the Greek public, was going to vote yes. And that way he could step away. And then the rest of his party would implement the memorandum. And then he could say, well, it wasn't me. I let the people decide. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
However, that didn't happen, because what happened is during this period when, let's say the period before the yes or no vote was finally decided, the media in Greece had every single academic, actors, actresses, university professors, anybody you could think of, politicians. They were bringing politicians from the past to go on TV and saying, we have to vote yes. And at the same time, they had closed down the banks. They had put capital controls on everything about 3 weeks ago now.
Three and a half weeks ago.
And I'm sure you've heard of that as
Oh, sure did. Yep.
They did this for the reason of, well, two reasons, really. One is to scare, was to initially to scare people into voting yes. So that way they could say, oh, if you want the banks to open again, you better vote yes. So they unlock the money and you can take your money out again and everything will be back to normal. And number two was that the reality is that if everybody starts withdrawing money like that, there's not really that amount of money, cash in those banks already. It's already been ransacked, this money. It's already been stolen. So in order for people not to find that out, they implemented capital control. So the average Greek citizen today, and even up until now as of the time of this recording, they can only take 60 euros a day out of the bank account, out of the account or out of the ATM machine.
Right.
The last weeks, the ATMs were empty of money. Before they implemented these controls, people rushed to ATMs to take as much cash as they could out. And I can get into more details of that later about what they're doing with this memorandum. But essentially, this was a huge shock because even with all that propaganda, even with all the propaganda to get people to vote yes, and the polls were all saying that it's going to be a yes for sure. There was all kinds of polls being released in the Greek media that it's going to be yes 70% or 65% yes. It ended up being 63% no.
Yeah.
61. It was like 61, 62, something like this, or low 60s. No. And I noticed right after that happened that Tsipras gave a speech, you know, to the Greeks saying this is a victory for democracy. And he looked a little strange. His voice was a little slurred. And it sounded to me like he was on some kind of pills or something, like something really happened where you could tell that he really wasn't expecting exactly that kind of outcome. And prior to that, him and his finance minister said that if it was a yes vote, that they would resign. But now that the vote had been no, his finance minister, the one who used to ride the motorcycle and everything, he resigned anyway, even though it was a no vote, but Tsipras had to stick around. And I don't think he wanted to stick around because he wanted to walk away. So since then, they signed the biggest memorandum in history now, like as I said before. Now they're going to cut people's pensions by half. They're going to even take taxes from people for, they want to take the taxes for 2015 for businesses and also take half of the taxes for 2016, which you haven't even earned yet, I don't even think this has ever been done before in any country in the world, to take taxes for money you haven't even made yet.
Actually, that happens in Sweden regularly.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I guess
so. How much do you estimate that you're going to make? And then they take that from you. So, you know, but yeah, that's, it's heading in our direction then, in other words.
They want to take 50% businesses in Greece. They want to take, let's say you made, 15,000 euros. They want to tax that 15,000 euros you made for 2015. And then they also want to tax the projected income, they want you to pay 50% of that upfront for 2016.
Yep.
Now, I was unaware that they did this in Sweden. I've never heard of it in any other country, like in America or in England or anywhere like that. But
yeah, it's just when you start a business, so it doesn't happen all the time. But nonetheless, it's the same idea anyway. But yeah, go ahead.
No, this is for businesses that are already established.
Yeah.
It's not new business. So this is like just new laws. If you have a business, they're going to take more money from you.
Yeah.
They're also doing something for Greeks from abroad right now, which I heard about. I heard about this yesterday morning, where if you're a Greek that lives, like let's say in the United States or in England, and you have a savings account in Greece, if you haven't touched that account, like in other words, made like a a full-on deposit or withdrawal in a year. They're going to shut down your account, close it, and appropriate the funds.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the new thing that just did. I know this because a few of my my comrades here in the New York division, they're in Greece right now, and their families are there, you know, doing some banking and whatnot over the summertime, and they just encountered this. They had to do kind of withdrawals and whatnot just to keep the account open. But a lot of people who haven't had a chance to go to Greece or they haven't been there in a while, they're going to get all their money taken, just like that.
Wow.
So this is the radical leftist memorandum, Henrik.
Yep.
This is what radical leftism looks like in form of a memorandum, which is pretty radical, I could say. Yes. If you want to call it radical, yes.
Exactly, it is.
Radical.
Wow. So, So obviously complete just sellout. I mean, it's such a mess. I mean, it's so many different factors to what's happening here. But would you say, this might be difficult for you to answer, but was this mainly a isolated political issue, or were there banking interests involved in this? You know, we've heard, if we back up a few years, we've heard about Goldman Sachs, for example. There were some kind of involvement there of the bookkeeping and what have you. Was this a way, do you think, to basically suck another country dry, or was it solely an accident, politically speaking? What's your view on this?
The main thing that they try to promote in the official mainstream media and in the leftist, let's say, circles is that this was merely a result of mismanagement of the country. Well, I should say the left, the political left in Greece and in Europe tries to make it more like it's Merkel taking their money and being mean, taking the, you know, tricking them, you know, Goldman Sachs. Tricked them, they cooked the books, and they took all the money now, and this kind of thing. Whereas the more conservatives, they try to say, oh, it was just mismanagement. It was bad decisions on the Greek government, and that's what's brought us in this predicament. In reality, what it is that all these loans that were being given all these 40 years and all of the things that have led up to what we have today was... it was planned. It was designed to loan the country money to get it into insane amounts of debt that they know that you can't pay back. And it's very easy to determine that because the country doesn't produce enough to pay back those kind of loans.
Yeah.
And they don't have any, you know, production where they could sell something on an international market to recoup those loans. You know, it's the kind of thing where if Greece was borrowing money to invest in factories or to invest in a kind of you know, automotive industry or to revamp their shipping industry or even their tourism industry or any of this, it would be a different story, because you could then argue maybe that, you know, they would borrow the money from Europe and then it would end up producing more money for the country, which would justify the cost of the loan. But this wasn't happening. It was just putting money down a black hole to maintain the political power for these sellout politicians. And these sellout politicians were put there by the European powers for a reason, which is they want geostrategic political control of Greece, of the resources. It's already been discovered that there's huge amounts of hydrocarbons underneath the Aegean Sea.
Uh-huh.
Off the coast of Crete.
Right.
There's also a huge incentive for the Israelis who want to, they just recently purchased, under the last government, they purchased the waterworks in the northern Greek city of Thessaloniki. So they have access to the Greek water supply up there, because in Israel they have a shortage of water and they want more sources to get water.
Oh, you should give it to them for free, in fact. Just ship it down.
Well, basically,
you know?
That's what's happening now. God. Is that they can't pay back the government says, oh, we can't pay back the loan. So the IMF and the EU politicians who work for this this Zionist conglomerate, they basically say, okay, well, you can't pay back the loan. Well, how about selling us your waterworks at a fire sale price? You know?
Yeah.
Or how about selling off your port? They're basically creating money out of out of thin air. And then when you can't pay back that ridiculous amount of money, they're taking real things.
Exactly.
Real resources.
Yeah.
This was the plan from the beginning. This is really nothing new. It's just that now it's gotten to the point where they've gotten so greedy and the the amount of money it took to keep that kind of bribery system the last 40 years going was affected because of the international crisis in 2008, where they couldn't, the European Union as an entity really couldn't afford to keep Greece on that kind of payroll for the geopolitical interests. So now they have to show their fangs more and just take a return on the investment completely, you know, to just take over, make their, they, in other words, they're making their domination of the country more visible. It's not that it never existed, because it's been going on for years. It's just that now it's much more visible to the Greek people and to the people all over Europe and the world, really.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. So it's politicians really on the inside who are willing to sell out. These are people, they just kind of show up on the scene and they do the bidding of the globalists as usual, because I mean, this has happened it's been particularly painful to see it happen in Greece, to be honest, in many different ways, because it's perhaps with the background that you just mentioned, that there was like already a strain on the country financially speaking, but this much of the same that you describe happened in a somewhat quicker way in Sweden in the 90s. You know, loans had really knocked the financial wind out of Sweden, and it was, you know, at the time it was good times. People were buying, you know, new cars and houses and a lot of other stuff they didn't need. But then eventually, you know, this opened up the liberalization of the economy further, and also to immigration and things like that. And they could transform the entire country after they've knocked us down financially, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, in the case of Sweden, I think that at least up until recently, unlike Greece, Sweden had some industry. I mean, it had the car company, which I don't think exists anymore now in Sweden. Volvo it had over there.
Yeah, they sold out to
the Americans.
Yeah.
I think they sold out to Ford, if I'm not mistaken, at some point.
Yeah, was it Ford or GM? I've always confused that. Well, but it was one of the two.
Anyway, yeah. the reason I'm talking about the contrast is that in a country like Greece, these effects of this type of system collapsing, or the lack of funding going into this public service thing, is a lot more visible, and it will collapse the economy much faster, because the private sector was pretty much non-existent. It was so bad in Greece that to take a private sector job was completely inferior to taking a public sector job. I mean, if you worked for, I knew some Americans that worked for Coca-Cola in Athens when I lived there, and they were making about 800, 900 euros a month, which was scaled to the average Greek private sector wage. Whereas, a villager that barely speaks English, that has no skills, is working in a Greek city hall office stamping something, is making 2,000 euros a month and getting a pension.
Wow.
And getting vacations on every other holiday that could exist, and so on and so forth. So you'd have to be a fool to want to work in the private sector in Greece. Whereas I don't know if this was the case in Sweden, where there was that much of a imbalance, let's say. Like, I know there are some, you know, good companies in Sweden that probably existed in the 90s that, you know, you could be advantageous or more advantageous than working in City Hall. I don't know.
Oh, sure. For sure. Yeah. No, those differences there. It's always been very equality in that sense. But this is in Greece, then this is a way of kind of, well, how do we put it, bribing the managerial class to just continue with the state bureaucracy and head in the right direction, right?
Right. Well, you know, it's very easy to do that, because in a poor country like Greece that was relatively very poor and destroyed by wars and everything, you know, the Civil War, World War II, then the Civil War, then the conflicts with Turkey, and all these kind of things that had transpired over so many years, you know, being a country in the Balkans with a lot of instability. When this happened, the people were so tired of living like that, and it was very easy for someone to come in and just change their lives overnight and give them a middle-class lifestyle and get them to agree to anything, you know?
Yeah.
By doing that, you can really, it's a form of bribery without it being, you know, just going, politicians going to people's houses and putting money in their pocket. Instead, they just gave it to a city hall office, and then they gave them the money. And literally, it was so bad. Like, I remember living there, and I would go into an office of some kind to get papers, you know, like some kind of bureaucratic thing, like a tax number. And these people would be so rude to you And this is not just me. I mean, anybody in Greece that can tell you that if you go into an office in Greece and you want to get something done, like papers or whatever it is you need to get done, bureaucracy, they're like the most rude employees you can imagine. They would sit there smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee, talking on the phone, blowing smoke in your face, yelling at you. Why? Because they know that they cannot be fired for any reason.
Yeah.
Even if they didn't have, and the reason why they can't be fired is because the reason why they have that job is because they're loyal to a certain political party. In this case, it was either the, up until very, very recently, it was either one of the two. It was PASOK or New Democracy, the center right or the center left. So now this is all, you know, getting destroyed, but that's basically how it got to be that way. Yeah. So.
Wow, absolutely amazing. I mean, we have much more to talk about here, George. We're gonna take a break in a little bit here, but and we, in the second segment, we're gonna get into more, obviously, of how you think the Golden Dawn could have cleaned all this up. What you know, the right attitude and approach to this could have been, and actually, if they have gotten some power, what actually could be done, do you think, to clean up the country? There's a lot of different things here I want to get into, including the question about immigration as well, of course, how the left party now views that question, because obviously that's also a financial drain. Yet with the Mediterranean invasion from Africa, we've seen that has just kind of carried on. So there's a lot of those kinds of aspects we can speak more about in the second hour here. But give us some of the details, George. The website, give us if there's any other way people can either support you guys or get in contact with you or follow you on some of the social networks or something like that.
Sure. I'll give you, let's say, three, because we get a lot of questions about that, you know, in emails and whatnot. Our main site on the for the New York division, which has a lot of the English articles, the translations and whatnot, is, you could Google search Golden Dawn New York would be the easiest way. But the web address is, it's xameriki, which is AMERIKI. .wordpress.com. Our YouTube channel is Golden Dubs and Subs, which has all the subtitling. And a lot of people ask us about buying shirts and things like that for the party. They like the Mandros logo and things like that. They like the Golden Dawn symbolism and everything. And for that, we wanted to recommend the Golden Dawn shop in Greece itself, which does ship internationally, which is xa-shop.gr, which you can go on there and order, you know, different shirts and flags and things like that, because we get a lot of questions about that. What I would say is, though, that right now, because there's capital controls in Greece, to ask them how that's working right now, because I know they have PayPal, but I don't know how this kind of transaction can go on right now in Greece because of all the stuff happening right now. So wow. Be sure to email them and ask them that before you place an order. I just wanted to say with that.
Yeah.
And that's it. We're pretty much, if you find something in English about Golden Dawn, it's pretty certain, or you're looking for something in English about Golden Dawn, chances are you're going to run into one of our articles. We have, 700, 800 articles floating around on the internet right now. So.
All right. Very good. A lot of information for you guys there. Do check it out. And of course, we'll pick up here shortly after break. So stay with us, ladies and gentlemen. Stay with us, George, and we'll be right back. We'll be right back. Well, folks, when we continue in the second hour, we'll dive right into the immigration issue and the invasion into Greece from the Mediterranean, both from the Middle East, but also Northern Africa. Why is Europe and Greece acting like there's nothing that can be done when there clearly is? We ask George about how Greece used to secure its borders and how this can be simply brought back to ensure that we stop further immigration into Europe. It's not only a concern of Greece, because also Western and Northern European countries are getting a large amount of the refugees and immigrants too, just basically traveling through Italy and Greece to get to the promised land of the mythical land of liberal handouts and egalitarian democratic socialism. We talk about the future of Europe and also put the destructive agenda of the left in perspective and what will happen if their suicidal policies go unchallenged. We speak about the resistance that is building right now and that more and more people are getting sick, tired, and fed up with the war on Europeans and their heritage. We have a lot more to discuss in the second hour, so don't miss it, ladies and gentlemen. Very important, redicemembers.com is the website where you can acquire a membership, get instant access, and join us right away here in the second hour as we pick up right after the break. Thank you so much for listening.